Go ahead and call to order the Senate Committee on Commerce, and we have a public hearing and work session scheduled for House Bill 3305. I'm looking at the witness registration, and there's no one signed up, which is good, because I was going to make the comment that said, the more we talk, the longer it takes to get out of committee. So we will open the public hearing, not seeing anyone walking up. We'll close the public hearing, and we'll open up work session on House Bill 3305.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3305 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Barr moves 3305 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is any discussion? Any objection? None. So moved, and I will go ahead and carry this one on the floor. And so we'll close the work session on 3305. And if the president's office is listening, they can come down and bring us the paperwork so it can be processed today. And which one are we bringing? Okay, I think what I'm going to go ahead and do is first open up a work session on 2311. And, Council, if you could just give us a brief overview of 2311.
Yes, I'd be happy to. 2311, House Bill 2311 expands the definition of a Monte Carlo event, declares emergency effective upon passage. We heard this on April 12th, and there's no revenue impact, and there's a minimal fiscal impact, but no statement issued.
All right. And we heard this last week, if I remember correctly. And I guess, Senator Beyer, if you're comfortable and would like to make a motion on 2311, that'd be great.
And, Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 2311 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Even though I recognize that a certain senator sits to my right, like to raise the clause, and the witness and testimony didn't give the right answer, we'll move it anyway.
That's very, very, honorable of you to acknowledge that. Of course, the senator to your right is not here, so he will not be able to have the benefit of drooling over the relating clause. And I agree, the witness did not get proper preparation as to the correct answer to your question. But is there any objection to Senator Beyer's motion to move House Bill 2311 to the floor with a due pass recommendation? Not seeing any. So ordered. And Senator Wissett, I'd hate to even ask Senator Beyer to actually carry this bill after getting the answer he got. Would you be comfortable?
Sure.
Senator Wissett.
Senator Ringel wants to carry it.
In fact, I think Senator Ringel should carry this one. Senator Wissett, we'll see if there's another one here for you, but I appreciate that. I think Senator Ringel.
I don't feel put on at all.
We'll see how Senator Ringel thinks about that. And I'm going to go ahead and open up I'll close the work session on 2311, open the work session on 2124. Council?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2124 prohibits transferring or acquiring a business. Excuse me. He always interrupts me when I'm talking. Transferring or acquiring a business primarily for the purpose of obtaining a lower unemployment tax rate or advising another person to engage in such activity. There is a revenue impact statement issued, and there is no fiscal impact. We heard this on April 12th.
And I'm going to let Senator Beyer look at his notes and see if there's anything else he had. Okay, your notes. The official notes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I remember that I had asked a couple questions on this bill and here, and I was trying to refresh my memory. A concern I had is how they determined who was suited dumping, as they called it, and they seemed to have a good answer for how they determined that. The other question was whether or not, or how it related to Senate Bill 37, and whether or not we were going to catch the same issues in that. And I'm trying my hardest to read what this answer was. Perhaps the council will read her writing.
I try to read my writing. Alters law that Senate Bill 37 is related to.
Okay, so it is the same issue, but the concern was make sure we don't get hooked by the same thing that happened in Senate Bill 37 in legitimate sales.
Why don't we go ahead and just put that on the record, since that's a question I'd just like to resolve and make sure we have something on the record, if you identify yourself.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Renee Bryant. I'm the tax manager for the Employment Department. And Senator Barr, yes, I did double check that after the last hearing. This is only going to involve transfers where there's an actual transfer of employment, so mere transfer of assets and that type of things will not affect this bill at all.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, with that assurance, I would move House Bill 2124 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Barr moves House Bill 2124 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? Not hearing or seeing any. So ordered. And Senator Wissett, would you be kind enough to carry this one?
Sure.
So we'll close the work session on 2124, and we will go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2093. And I believe it's Mr. DeLuca.
Correct.
If you please come up, sir.
Excuse me.
Bless you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Peter DeLuca. I'm the administrator of Oregon OSHA. The bill before you represents our total legislative package for this year. It's a bill that's good for business and for government, and it has no impact on labor. In 1999, this legislature passed a bill, House Bill 2830, which the big impact of which was to focus our attention on the businesses that were most unsafe. A secondary impact was to notify employers that were defined as most unsafe in a couple of ways. First, their claims rate was above the state average, and secondly, it was an employer that the department defined as in a hazardous working environment. And we've had this for about 5 years. We issue anywhere from 7,000 to sometimes more letters per year, notification to employers that their business is hazardous. The problem that we found is that because of the way the statute is written, and we all got together and we thought about it, and we looked at it, and we thought it was a good idea, but the way it's written, it requires us at times to notify businesses that in fact are not unsafe. And that comes about because if an employer has 10 employees and a safe work record, but injures one of them in a given year, then their rate is like 10%. And in all likelihood, they're going to get a letter from us. And they get this letter and they call us up and say, wait a minute, I thought I was a pretty safe employer. What's all this about? So the bottom line in this bill is we're asking to eliminate that particular requirement and just to allow us to define who the most unsafe employers are. It will limit the numbers of letters that we have to send. It will focus better our attention on the really, truly unsafe employers because we've got all those numbers in our office. And so for that reason, it's good for government and it's good for business. There was no opposition to this in the House. The person who, the representative who carried this in the House was Representative Krupp, and he spoke on the House floor in favor of this particular bill. So we'd urge your support. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Okay, and before we go to questions, I'm going to see if I can save myself a little pain and suffering. Council, was there anything else that you wanted to add to the presentation that I didn't allow you to do beforehand?
I think I'm okay. Thank you.
Okay, just checking. Yes. Are there any questions for Mr. DeLuca? Senator Wissett.
Mr. Brzezinski, Mr. DeLuca. In fact, after you have issued these letters of warning, is there a greater likelihood that you will inspect those particular ones that have received the letter than others?
Mr. Chair, Senator Wissett, what the letter says in part is kind of twofold. It says this notifies you that you're in that unsafe category, and two results might happen. One is you might get an inspection. You have a greater likelihood of an inspection. And the second is we have consultative services that you might want to take advantage of. Now, we don't inspect everybody that gets a letter because we don't have enough compliance officers to do it. But the people who do get a letter, generally speaking, are in a higher category of likelihood to get inspected.
I understand that, but I was wondering if, in fact, they do get inspected more often or whether it's just a letter.
Oh, if they get inspected more often?
If they actually do.
Yes.
The letter suggests that they will get there and have a higher likelihood. Is there a highly likelihood in practice? Do you inspect them more often?
In practice, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Well, I think I just, for clarification, the way I recall this in 99, I worked on this bill at the time, and in fact, we prioritized, or we had you guys prioritize who you're going to inspect. And isn't it a certain number of inspections have to be done on the higher incidence of workforce injury and a very low number of random inspections just out, you know, everybody else?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byers, that's absolutely correct. We almost don't even get into that second category, going completely off of this list of more hazardous employers.
Any other questions? Mr. Luca, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony on House Bill 2093? Not seeing any, I'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2093. And I think the chair is ready to go ahead and go forward unless there's some issues anyone has. If not, we'll open a work session on House Bill 2093.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2093 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Byer moves House Bill 2093 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And we'll go ahead and close the work session on 2093 and carrier. Senator Byer, would you like to carry this one?
That'd be fine.
We got two other bills. Do we have sheets? Oh, I put myself down. But I can also close my clock.
I see. Did you pass it out?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can't vote this time.
We'll let you come back and vote on that. Let's go ahead and open up the scene order. Open a public hearing on 2091. And at this time, Council, why don't you go ahead and give us an overview. And I've got John Schultz. Excuse me. And then Ed Johnson. But John, why don't you come on up first, and Anna, why don't you give us the overview.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2091A, transfers review process for certain workers' compensation contested claims from the Office of Administrative Hearings to the Workers' Compensation Board. There's no revenue impact, and there's a fiscal impact issue.
John?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm John Schultz, Administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division of the Department and Consumer and Business Services, and I'm here today to request the committee's support for HB 2091A. Workers' compensation contested case hearings are currently conducted in two separate jurisdictions. They are conducted through the Workers' Compensation Board, which is an independent review board for workers' compensation appellate issues. They're also conducted in the Office of Administrative Hearings. Sometimes the same claim will find itself in front of either jurisdiction, depending on the matter that's being appealed. That's a confusing issue for people. It's confusing to the attorneys, frankly, who are trying to practice in the workers' compensation arena to determine which area do they file their appeal in. In addition, we also have administrative reviews that go on at the division itself under the director's jurisdiction, so there's actually three different areas that an appeal process can follow. This bill is a regulatory streamlining bill. This bill's purpose is to make it simpler for people to understand where to bring their appeal on a workers' compensation issue. It achieves that purpose by eliminating one avenue that exists today, the avenue to go to the Office of Administrative Hearing. As I mentioned, not all of our contested cases go to the Office of Administrative Hearings. In fact, it's only about 200 a year, which is a very small percentage of our contested cases. This would decrease the complexity of an already too complex system, as you've probably seen in some of the testimony we've already had this session. And I think it would improve timeliness for appeals process, as we can move through the appeal process in a more timely fashion by using the Workers' Compensation Board mediation program. It upholds public policy agreements that have already been made, one of which is to have an independent body do the appeals process. Another is to have medical experts decide medical issues, and that's one of the areas where hearings can go now towards the Office of Administrative Hearing. It upholds the legislature's policy agreement to have the independent review, which I mentioned before. The Workers' Compensation Board has the capacity to absorb these 200 cases without any increase in FTEs at the board. They can absorb it. There are some administrative cost savings that we will realize at the division, about $270,000 to $280,000 a year that we pay in fees to the Office of Administrative Hearings that we will not have to pay. So I want to thank you for the opportunity to provide some input on this bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that I could.
Questions? No, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon. My name is Ed Johnson, Lincoln County. I'm not against this bill. It can work for the workers, but I do have concerns. I'm one of those injured workers that have been fighting workman's comp off and on for about 14 years. I have basically 7 blown discs. C3-4 is going in the spinal cord. 4-5-5-6 is fused. Part of that is in the spinal cord. 6-7 is in the spinal cord. T1 and 2 that is herniated through L4 through S1 that's herniated, and L4-5 is going in the spinal cord. So I'm an extreme chronic pain patient. I'm bringing this letter to you that I wrote John Schultz that I left at his office, and dealing with this no-fault system is very frustrating with administrative rules or administrative law judges, because no-fault system, I think there should be amendment into it. So at least the people, the general public, especially somebody in my case that has been proven on the Senate floor, and I've had all the documents, MRIs and x-rays, and even x-rays that have disappeared from the insurance company themselves when they've received them battling this. I think that we need some option for us to be able to have another legal outlet, because it's no fault system. I mean, I don't get medical coverage when it comes down to it. I don't get my pain medicine. I don't get no coverage at all. Should get a medical bed. I don't get any of this coverage through the workman's comp system and through my insurance company that I had when I originally got injured on the job, when my neck was basically broken with a pipe. It was a barroom fight. I was a bouncer at a nightclub, 5-on-1, and so I ended up with 280 discs for getting my head patched with a pipe, closed head injury, and the insurance company refused to deal with the closed head injury or the swelling on the right side of my brain, because they told me that's not an issue, and they can't be bothered with that primarily because head injuries nobody could deal with or understand. And I go through a lot of chronic pain over it. So I'm not against the bill. I just think there needs to be an amendment into it as I pass this letter to you to read and take consideration, because people in my consideration or situation has been really frustrating because of all that and because of both sides of the system. I ended up losing my family over it because I did not get my workman's comp paycheck that I was supposed to get when I went in for surgery. I was fired from my job because I went in for surgery. And there's no recourse for anybody in this. Because I didn't have an income, I lost my family. family. So you talk about fair and justice. I'm one of those people that actually do believe in the Constitution, and because of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, I've had the states taken away from me. So I just like one amendment into it. I'm not against it. We need to have some procedure, but we need to have something to benefit the injured worker instead of the insurance company and the agencies just ignoring them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnston. Any questions for Mr. Johnston? Thank you for your testimony, sir. I have no one else signed up for House Bill 2091. Is there anyone else in the room that wanted to give testimony today? If not, I'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2091. And, community, are we ready to move this one, or did we want time? I'll go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 2091.
Chair, I move House Bill 2091 to the floor with the due pass recommendations.
Senator Beyer moves House Bill 2091 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And we need a carrier for 2091. Senator Burdick, Senator Wissett, you want to take this one?
Yes. Okay.
All right. Senator Wissett will take this one. And we'll close the work session on 2091. And then our last one that we have scheduled for today is open a public hearing on House Bill 2405. And I don't. These two. Let's do it this way.
Yeah.
Thank you. I believe it's Martin Alvey?
Alvey.
Mr. Alvey, please come forward. Thank you.
Senator Pazansky, members of the committee, my name is Martin Alvey. I'm an attorney in Southwest Portland. I've been representing injured workers for about the last 18 years in the workers' compensation system. I'm here to testify today on my own behalf and as chair of the workers' compensation section of the Oregon Trial Lawyers. And I want to first give you some historical perspective as to how we got where we are in the process and why this bill is a good fix for a problem that occurs fairly frequently in the workers' compensation practice that I deal with. Before 1995, when an injured worker wanted to reopen his claim because his or her condition had gotten worse, virtually any indication in a doctor's chart note or a record would suffice if the word worsening were included in the chart note or the medical evidence or words to that effect. It was a very nebulous area of the law, and nebulous areas of the law are prone to litigation. And so what an injured workers advocate would consider to be an aggravation claim, the insurance company would have ignored and litigation would ensue. To rectify that situation in 1995 in Senate Bill 369, along with a whole host of other changes, one of the changes that was implemented was to require that when an aggravation claim is being submitted, that the physician or the worker sign a form indicating that an aggravation claim was being presented. It created kind of a bright line so that when the claim got to the insurance carrier, the insurance carrier would know this is a claim for aggravation as opposed to sifting through the tea leaves as it did in the practice before that time. As that change worked its way through the litigation system, the decisions that came down from the Workers' Compensation Board and the courts construed that provision to require that that form be physically accompanied by a written document from the attending physician substantiating a worsening of the worker's accepted condition. And the difficulty that arose was the aggravation claim form may be filled out, the doctor would dictate his chart note, and then it would go off and be transcribed, and the two documents would arrive at the claims examiner's desk at different times. If they didn't arrive in the same envelope, stapled together, the claims examiners were ignoring the claims for aggravation because they didn't arrive at the same time, and the statute is being interpreted to require that happen. So Senate House Bill 2405 was the workers' compensation section of the trial lawyers association's fix for that problem. And it really did get to be a problem. It's just not a kind of a housekeeping measure. What would happen in real life is that the aggravation claim forms would go in, the injured worker would wait and wait and wait and think that the aggravation claim was being processed. No compensation was coming for the worsened condition. And literally, from personal experience, I've shown up on the day of hearing 3 months later and have the insurance company tell me, well, your aggravation claim is not valid because it was never properly perfected 3 months before, because our claims examiner is going to say the chart note and the form didn't arrive in the same envelope. And so it protracted things and gave it a large amount of uncertainty. What 2405 does is it eliminates the requirement that the two arrive at the same time. And it says, and a claim for aggravation is perfected, or a prima facie case for an aggravation claim is made when the insurer receives the aggravation claim form. Then a compromise that arose during the AMLAC process was that the insurers were concerned that without some sort of objective evidence of a worsening, they'd be required to start time loss payments to the injured worker upon receipt of that form. As the bill worked its way through the system, there's been a change to that, and 2405A now states that there has to be a written document received from the attending physician in order for time loss to commence. So the two documents don't have to arrive in the same envelope anymore. The claim will start getting processed with receipt of the claim form. Time loss doesn't necessarily have to start until the chart note substantiating the worsening arrives. The bill passed out of the House with the support of the Oregon Self-Insureds. And, we would urge you to do likewise. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Counsel, looking at your summary, it looks like the House vote on this was 55-0. Is there anything else that we needed to note? I mean, it looks like this went through pretty quick.
I don't think there's anything else to note. He did mention that MLAC has reviewed this and supports this.
All right. Let me go ahead and open up for any questions anyone might have.
That was based on my questions.
Okay. Oh, Senator Wissett, go right ahead.
When Senator Brzezinski, sir, did you say that the time loss would not necessarily begin with the receipt of the claim? Or did you just mean did?
Senator Wissett, Chair Brzezinski, and that's exactly what Section 6 of the bill states, that the insurer's obligation to commence making time loss payments does not arise until the employer receives a written report that verifies the worker's inability to work and substantiates by objective medical findings that the worker has suffered a worsened condition attributable to the compensable injury.
From the physician.
From the physician.
Yeah. So not necessarily was... Okay.
Yeah. So hypothetically, Senator Wittsitt, you could have the physician write on the aggravation claim form all the documentation that's needed to trigger their obligation to start time loss, but not necessarily so.
Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that wanted to testify on House Bill 2405? Not seeing or hearing anyone jumping up, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on 2405. And again, committee, I think I'm ready to go ahead and move this if we're comfortable with it. Now I'll go ahead and open the work session on House Bill 2405.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2405, apparently A in growth, even though it's not my file. Well, to do pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer moves House Bill 2405, A in growth, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Burdick, will you carry this one?
Happy to.
Senator Burdick will be our carrier, and that will close the work session on House Bill 2405. And, Council, what else do we need to cover? Do we have anything like, I know that we've got our agenda done for today, but for Thursday, is there anything that you wanted to let us know? Or?
No, I think we're okay. I'll get you the agenda.
All right, with that, we'll go ahead and close the Commerce Committee for today. We're adjourned.